Penguin Random House Audio presents Zed by Joanna Kavena, read for you by Elliot Hill. For Barnes, you may talk and I may listen, and miracles might happen. Zed, noun, British, the letter Z. Origin, Late Middle English, from French, zed, via Late Latin, from Greek, zeta. This information provided courtesy of WikiBeetle. 1. At 2:23 a.m, the Beetle Insight alarm system went off. This indicated a threat to national security. Various people were instantly informed, and among them was Douglas Varley, who was woken by his Beetle band saying, "Scrace Dickens." Still mired in sleep, Varley heard this as "disgrace" and leaped out of bed, hoping thereby to avert this calamity. But then Scrace Dickens said, "Varley, it's one of yours." "What's one of mine? You didn't hear yet?" "No, I was asleep until 5 seconds ago." Scrace Dickens, a very intelligent personal assistant who never slept, paused for a moment to process and discard this irrelevant information. "So it seems you have not yet read the initial reports," he said eventually.
"It seems so," said Varley.
Varley was 34, his blonde hair streaked with grey, a genetic trait he derived from his mother. He was tall and had once been shy, but now lacked the time for such nuances. He had the practically identical background of most senior Beetle employees, including a gilded academic career at an Ivy League university and a fundamental obsession with chess and beer. This was Beetle CEO Guy Mathias's background as well, though Guy had dropped out in his third year at Stanford because his degree, in artificial intelligence, was insufficiently challenging. Varley had worked for Beetle in the US for the past decade, in charge of life chain analysis and troubleshooting. This meant he was constantly fending off potential or actual disasters. He had recently been posted to London because the UK had the most advanced benign regulatory environment in the world, and Beetle was the world leader in benign regulatory environments.
"Do you want me to summarise everything for you?" said Scrace Dickens kindly.
Varley generally refused offers of summaries from his very intelligent personal assistant, also known as a Veep, to maintain the illusion of autonomy. But this morning his head ached. He had drunk a little too much wine the previous night, as doubtless his Beetle band had registered, and he noted with some alarm that his hands were trembling.
"All right, thanks," he said ungratefully.
Within a few minutes, Varley had gained a clear picture of the case, his case. The previous day, George Mann, 45, tall and slightly overweight, a partner at AHTCH, a globally recognised brand for flow control valve technology and engineering innovation, father of two boys, husband to Margaret Collins, a lawyer, had left his office on the 15th floor of the Gherkin and walked along the corridor, saying a brisk and distracted goodnight to his very intelligent personal assistant, Bob Sykes. He had passed another colleague in the corridor and nodded to him. It was 18:08, and therefore too early for George Mann to leave work. This was logged by Bob Sykes, and Mann's predictive algorithms were realigned, including his projected retirement age, monthly health insurance payments, and bonus prospects. Indeed, a beautiful ripple passed through all the predictive algorithms as they were adjusted accordingly. After leaving the main lobby of the Gherkin, George Mann seemed to be heading in the direction of the tube, as would have been usual. However, when he reached the station, he did not descend, but continued toward the river. He entered the Three Tuns pub at 1822. There, he sat in a corner and drank 7 whiskies and 3 bottles of wine over the next 6 hours. He didn't speak to anyone, except to order drinks at the bar. The pub was very busy at that time of day, and at one point, George Mann was asked if he would mind if someone used the chair to his left. He did not reply, but this was understandable because there was a great deal of noise, and the person shrugged and took the chair anyway. Shortly after midnight, George Mann asked his Beatle band to order him a car, which was duly requested from Mercury and appeared within minutes. The in-car operating system had no record of Mann saying anything at all. In line with usual Beatle Electrical Company protocols, the Very Intelligent Automated Driving System, VIADS, had simply wished Mann a good evening as he departed, but Mann had not replied. This was also quite usual. Lots of people ignored such conversational forays, and Mann had already requested location Home by Beatle Band. This location being a 2-up, 2-down Victorian terrace in a small square by Kennington Tube, overlooked by glass and steel edifices. Mann arrived home at 0047, let himself in, and walked to the kitchen. The fridge said, "Good evening, George, you're back late this fine evening." Ignoring this, Mann took the sharpest knife from a knife block and went upstairs to his bedroom, where his wife, Margaret, was asleep. Mann smothered her with a pillow and slit her throat. After this, he walked to his 14-year-old son Tom's room and smothered him as well, then stabbed the boy 4 times in the heart, and then walked into the next room and did the same to his 11-year-old son, William. At this point, the predictive algorithms crashed. Mann dropped the knife on the floor of William's room, left his family bleeding to death, and walked out of the house. By the time the police and ambulances arrived, Margaret, Tom, and William were dead. "Where did Mann go after that?" said Varley, feeling sick. "At 2:03 a.m., Mann threw his beetle pad in the river," said Scrace Dickens. "Then he walked along the river, heading east."
"But his interface implant is still working?"
"He doesn't have one."
"The Argus footage?" asked Varley.
"Of course," said Scrace Dickens, sounding slightly offended. Varley excused himself for a moment and went to the bathroom. There, he threw up copiously in the sink. This was disgusting and not cathartic at all, as he briefly hoped. He groaned and said,
"For fuck's sake."
Then imagine Scrace Dickens logging this as well. It wasn't Scrace Dickens's fault. The record was instantaneous. Second by second, even microsecond by microsecond. He washed his face, cleaned his teeth. His clothes had started vibrating, but that was superfluous. He said, "Stop," and they stopped. He said, "I need to speak to Eloise Jane." And Scrace Dickens said, "Of course." Again, as if this were a redundant request. In a sense, it was, because Scrace Dickens operated to the most beautiful and sophisticated algorithms and understood a crucial truth. At every moment, Varley would choose a path, and the path of greatest probability was the most probable choice. In the circumstances, it was pretty much inevitable that he would choose to speak to Eloise. What were the other paths? Varley wondered as he waited for her to answer. To not speak to Eloise. To go back to bed. To lie there groaning. To have a breakdown. To leave his own job. And then he might even hurl himself off Blackfriars Bridge into the murky depths beneath. They were all paths. He could pick up a gun and shoot himself, except he didn't have a gun. Therefore, Scrace Dickens had not considered this path of probability. Also...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?